now on Alive 90.5. Here's the latest news, brought to you by Pace, transforming places since 1978.
National Radio News.
Hello, I'm Laura Devoy. Victoria has experienced another double-digit coronavirus count with 66 new COVID-19 cases diagnosed in the past 24 hours. 17 of the infections are linked to known outbreaks and 20 were found in routine testing. There are now 442 active COVID-19 cases in Victoria. Premier Daniel Andrews says many of the new infections came from hotspot suburbs in Melbourne that are now under lockdown. He says it's important people continue to follow stay-at-home orders to slow the spread of the virus.
I know it is frustrating. I know it is very challenging, and people would prefer not to be in the circumstances we are in. I understand that. We all desperately want this to be over, but we've got to get on top of this spike. We've got to get on top of these unacceptably high case numbers.
Meanwhile, New South Wales health authorities have confirmed no new cases in the past 24 hours. The case of a Woolworths worker in Sydney's Inner West was added to the tally last month when he tested positive in hotel quarantine in Melbourne. Leaders from both parties are making their final pitch to voters in the crucial Eden Monaro by-election ahead of voters hitting the polls tomorrow. From Canberra, Amanda Kopp reports.
In what will be a major test for both Scott Morrison and Anthony Albanese, the Eden Monaro by-election on the New South Wales south coast is seen as a key indicator of voter sentiment. It's been 100 years since a sitting government won a seat off the opposition in a by-election, but Anthony Albanese says he's not focused on leadership contests.
Won't that reflect on your leadership at least?
We're focused on getting every vote in the box between now and 6 p.m. tomorrow.
Saturday's vote will also be the first by-election conducted during COVID-19 distancing restrictions. Amanda Kopp, National Radio News, Canberra.
The ACT is the latest jurisdiction to invoke the threat of huge fines for any Victorian travelling into the territory and refusing to self-isolate. The ACT has issued a public health direction authorising mandatory quarantine for anyone who has been to a COVID-19 hotspot. Victorians wishing to travel to the ACT will have to self-isolate at their own cost for 14 days. The direction was issued to complement stay-at-home orders for 36 Melbourne suburbs. Anyone already in Canberra who has recently been to a declared hotspot is also being urged to self-isolate. A former New South Wales minister who resigned from Cabinet after breaching coronavirus restrictions has had his fine withdrawn. Former Arts Minister Don Harwin was fined $1,000 for travelling to his holiday home on the Central Coast while a stay-at-home order was in place over Easter. At the time, Mr Harwin maintained he had done nothing wrong as he had been advised his living arrangements complied with the state's public health order. He was fined $1,000, but public prosecutors today withdrew the penalty. The Australian Electoral Commission has confirmed changes to federal electorates in Victoria, Western Australia and the Northern Territory. In the House of Representatives, Victoria will gain a 39th electorate, WA will lose one of its 16 seats and the NT will decrease from 2 seats to 1. Electoral Commissioner Tom Rogers says the changes were based on the most recent official population figures.
National Radio News is supported by the Judith Nielsen Institute for Journalism and Ideas and the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.org.au.
And now for the latest weather on Alive 90.5, brought to you by Concise Finance, your local mortgage broker.
It's currently 17 degrees. The top is a forecast 18 degrees and it's sunny, so we're likely going to get there. The winds are westerly, 10 to 20 kilometres an hour, increasing to 30 kilometres an hour in the afternoon. The sun will set tonight at 5:01 and be back up again at 7:01 tomorrow morning. The forecast for the weekend is Saturday, mostly sunny, 5 to 16. Sunday, sunny, 5 to 18. And back to work week Monday, mostly sunny, 5 to 17. The moon is a waxing gibbous with full moon on Sunday.
The updated traffic brought to you by Fernwood Gym of Seven Hills and North Rocks on Alive 90.5.
Kemps Creek, Elizabeth Drive at Western Road. Has it a pothole? The westbound traffic is affected. Please exercise caution. Repairs are expected to take all day. Homebush Bay, M4 Motorway, G-Loop on-ramp from Homebush Bay Drive. The on-ramp is closed in the westbound direction with a truck crash, so you're likely going to have your entry to the M4 interrupted if you're coming from the Concord Strathfield area. Please take caution and look for the diversions. Roselle, Victoria Road at Quirk Street. Emergency roadwork, 1 of 3 westbound lanes there to give you a bit of a quirky afternoon on the traffic in Roselle. And that's all we have at the moment. A few pop-up cycleways. Please be careful near the city as you look for those cyclists. It's 6 minutes past 12. You're on a live 90.5 Business Insights with Mario.
Oh, David,
morning,
thank you,
Mario.
Well,
how are you? Afternoon.
Afternoon to all listeners of a live 90.5. Before we start the show, everybody who is going online, Business Insights with Mario on Facebook, thanks to Darren Capes Davis, you know, he organized the cameras. Secondly, if you like to listening to all listeners on Instagram, please go on our website www.alive905.com.au, press the button, listen now, stream now, and you're going to hear the sexiest voice and the most sexiest engineer, Darren Capes Davis, in the studio with our guest. So Darren, today I will not have no speech, but I would like to, you know, we go to our guest because he is truly unique and unique in many ways. But, you know, apart, he doesn't speak English, so we need to do the sign language. So everybody who's listening, I'm sorry you can't hear it. I'm just joking. Darren, we're just now coming out of the COVID-19 crisis, but during the COVID-19 crisis, thanks to Darren, this station was working 24/7 without problems. However, most of our communications with our clients and our guests and our sponsors has been either over the phone, messages, Viber, Tinder, I'm sorry, not Tinder, the other
Twitter.
And of course, we've done the video conferencing quite a lot. And our guest today in the studio, he's a truly remarkable man. He knows a lot about cyber protection and how to utilize the gadgets, apps, and everything else. So, Darren, would you take the word, and this time you introduce our guest instead of me, because I didn't open Facebook, so I don't know what everything says about him.
Well, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon. I tripped up again. It's between the Wednesday and the Friday.
I told you need more chocolate before the show, that's for sure.
Coffee. And chocolate.
Okay,
but this
coffee.
afternoon we do have Matt Koopmans with us. Good afternoon, Matt. How are you?
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me on the show, and thanks to all the listeners for tuning in.
And we always love to have the listeners know who is Matt Koopman. So
if you
could describe to us who you are, and we don't want to know about your business yet. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
We want to know who is Matt Koopman and what has made Matt what he is today.
Did you notice?
I must say to our
listeners, I'm surrounded with two very, very, groomed men. Darren, he done the haircut, and now our guest done the haircut, and my hairdresser, he's not around actually to do this. So guys, you're looking very good, very, very schmick with that. So who's Matt Koopman?
All right, so I do actually speak English, but you do get an accent with it because I'm born in the Netherlands. We've been here in Australia for 14 years now, my wife and I. We've lived in New Zealand before that and in the Netherlands for a couple of years. We actually met in Saudi Arabia, so it's we travel around a bit. My eldest son, before he was 10 years old, he already has lived in 12 houses. But now we are actually settled and we're not moving anymore. So that's
fantastic.
Are you sure? Not for a while.
Okay, that's
not for a while.
So where have you settled?
We live in Hornsby Heights.
I used to live there in Somerville Road.
We're close to Somerville Road. We're a little bit further, close to the Galston Gorge.
I ride through there often.
Fantastic. It's the loudest things that we have is the kookaburras in the garden.
What's the loudest thing in Netherlands?
Oh, there's actually quite a bit because the Netherlands is very, very small. If you know the Netherlands, it's a service area between Wollongong and Newcastle from north to south, and then from the coast to about the Blue Mountains. And 1/3 of the country is water, 1/3 is agriculture, and the remaining 1/3, we put 2/3 of the
people. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It's not that I'm asking for that, I'm asking for myself this time. You know what I mean? Why so many tulips in the Netherlands? Did you find it some other flowers?
So the tulips are actually not native to the Netherlands. They were imported from Turkey.
Okay.
And during the Golden Age, they were like a sign of value. It's like, you know, this is like the most valuable thing you could have. So everybody started growing tulips in Netherlands because we love money, right? So if it's valuable and we can grow it, we will grow it. And since then, we have
this whole tulip. So what did you say? You love money?
Oh, yes. No, Dutch people are famous for it, right?
Yes, that
that's right up our alley. I can see our millions flowing in.
There's yes. So many expressions.
You try tulips? To stipulate
tulip garden?
Yeah. Tulip garden, yeah.
In your backyard, you think?
Well, that would I don't want to go in agriculture. So that's the reason why tulips.
It's we love money. And the same thing is, if you know all the sayings, like going Dutch, which means you actually go to a restaurant and each pick his own bill, they called it going Dutch. Yeah. Actually, we don't even know that in the Netherlands. We never do that. But it's associated with the Netherlands because like, oh, the Dutch love money. And that has to do with the Golden Age when we were in the trade with the United East India Company and etc.
So what did you say in Australia?
What
did you say in Australia?
So we moved to New Zealand from the Netherlands because my wife, obviously, we met in Saudi Arabia. She's from the Philippines. She learned how to speak Dutch within 6 months. It's amazing, right? Dutch is a very difficult language. And I started realizing how difficult it is when I see my wife struggling with the language.
I know, darling, I tried to say hello in Dutch, but we're walking around last
week. Hello, goeiemiddag allemaal. Fantastische middag. Fantastisch mooie dag.
G'day, mate.
I'll not say that one yet.
It's hello, very guttural yeah. With the sound, but it also has a very difficult grammar. And yeah. See, my wife is a nurse, and in her work, you know, you obviously need to be able to communicate very, very well with the doctors that you're working with. So she said, I'd really like to work on my level again. You know, I didn't go to get a bachelor's degree and then work in this because I can't understand the language well enough. So she said, let's move to an English-speaking country. And I go like, well, the UK has got the same weather as the Netherlands, and we pay high tech, so why would we do that? Canada's way too cold. US, I've been there. She said, well, why don't we go to New Zealand? I said, no, that's fine. I can't think of anything why we shouldn't go. So we ended up in New Zealand. I ended up.
Yes, please continue. Yeah.
So I worked for a company in New Zealand called Capgemini New Zealand, the CGNZ, which was a local buyout. That got acquired by HP, so I ended up working for HP. Okay. And then Microsoft called me and said, "You know, Matt, do you want to take up a role in Sydney and start up our ERP services business?" Yeah. Because that was the business I was in, and that's how we ended up here, in a nutshell.
So you like it Australia very much, right?
I'm not going to move out again. We actually showed up for the citizenship services.
Yeah.
And we did all the pledges and everything. So we got the nationality. I got the passport. We got the little certificate. We got even a silver coin to commemorate the occasion. They just didn't hand out the accents. So it's still nice with the Dutch accent.
When I was doing the citizenship 2 years ago, and, you know, I will never take it. I told you, you know the boss story. But, you know, I was being told it's going to be better for my career. I got a tree, to plant a tree, as a symbol of the citizenship, you know what I mean? And I was like, that tree doesn't look right, that doesn't look nice, you know what I mean? So, you know what I mean, I ended up putting it in a park. But Matt, it says that you're 25 years of experience in leading business applications, right? Now, for me, applications, it's, I don't know, Viber, Twitter, you know what I mean, Facebook, but... Can you just, for our listeners, give it a broad intro into the business applications? Okay. What we consider in our world today, or maybe past 10 years, as I say, what's the business applications?
So the applications you mentioned are kind of consumer communicative applications, right? You have the social networks, etc. A business application is an application to manage the business where all the transactions go into. So very simple example that probably everybody that is in a business knows is accounting software. Like Xero or MYOB, etc. The first go live I did was in 1993. So I realized a little bit more than 25 years, but I'm sticking with the 25 years because the gray hair is enough reminders that I'm getting a little bit on the wrong side of 45. It's that was a forecasting application. So it was in a production environment and a very important one. It was the national manufacturer of booze in the Netherlands. So if that forecasting did not go well, then obviously people would not get their grog.
Yeah.
Right, so it's important. And what that application does is actually looked at all the purchase orders that you have, all the production orders that you have, and all the sales orders that you have. And then it starts forecasting, okay, this is when you need to purchase certain things. And that was in 1993. It was still a green screen type of application. So that's the business applications world. It's more around how to manage your business and how to make sure that you can serve your customers consistently and make some money at the end.
It's very interesting. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking that applications only what we have on the phone. To be honest with you, I was thinking that the systems we use, like accounting and everything else, it's a, I don't know, it's just a software program, you know, which install and utilizing. Well, I'm mistaken, Darren, right?
There's lots of applications. I can tell you.
I mean,
you
give me the look. It's like, because this is my non-education in that, I'm truly, you know, blessed having Darren in the studio because, like, you know, we can talk about things that he's going to say, okay, this can be done technologically looking, you know what I mean, and technology-wise. But I was thinking that applications are actually what we're seeing, okay, on my iPhone. Honestly, I'll be honest with you, I never consider accounting systems being application.
It's a very generic word, and thinking about the supply chain software, well, that's one part of it to do your forecasting. Another part is actually the making of it. So, just think the supply chain lines, your mechanics, your vats, if it was a brewery, things like that, all controlled by different sorts of applications running probably on hardware no dissimilar to your PC. Just it looks a bit different and made for actually just sitting in that environment of the factory floor.
Yeah, and it has gone through a lot of changes. So Mario is actually in one sense correct, particularly now in this day and age, all the business applications do reside on your phone. Right, so I can open up my phone and check if my customers have paid me because I can log into my accounting software and my accounting software logs into my bank and it says, hey, there's a new transaction and let's match it to this invoice that you sent last week, etc. So it is now all on your phone, but it didn't always, it wasn't always the case. So before, at the start of the they call it the third industrial revolution, the information age when we started doing record keeping on computers, etc., is, you had your own server. Right, and that's where there's a big box and way in the past it had reel-to-reel tapes to store stuff and that became hard drives. And so you had your server in your business and that kind of lasted until we started swapping that out for cloud-based software in the mid-2000s, so 2006 and then forward. But to really accelerate that, we have to go to 2010, 2011. And a comparison I make is think about the second industrial revolution, right, when we started having electricity. The first one was we mechanized everything and everyone had a big giant steam engine in their factory. Mm. And that's how we mechanized it. We had our own power plants. Those power plants are analogous to the servers we had in the past. Whereas now, you just plug in your electricity and it comes through the grid. And that is the analogy with the cloud software.
It's a commodity. Sorry,
it is
that's
a commodity.
What I was gonna say, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a disruption waiting to happen. Because what happens in the services industry, they're still based on, I need to commission this giant server with like an enterprise resource planning system, right? And they tend to cost millions of dollars to implement, take years, and always end up in tears and disappointment. Mm. And that's not because the software is bad. That's because there's a gap between what you expect it to do and what it actually does when you see it. Right, so here's what happens, right? So your implementation team comes over and they analyze your business and you buy the software and it's expensive, that software, so you expect a lot out of it. But your vision of that software, you've never seen it, is not 100% aligned with what the software actually does. And then your implementation partner, their vision of what your process is like, because they don't work for you, they don't run the process, they only get the information from you on how you communicate it runs, it's not 100%
so,
reliant on how
it actually runs. So what do you mean by a
process?
Runs. Yeah, I just want to ask this question.
So,
give me a good example.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say you buy something in the business, right? So the business has then a process, okay, I'm going to sell something to you. They then put that into a system that says, okay, I'm going to take X number of items from the shelf, so that updates the inventory, and gives it to you and sends out an invoice, which you pay, it generates the tax. So that's kind of your business process. Now, you can have a very simple business process. I sell something and I take it off the shelf and give it to you.
Yep.
And you pay and I do the tax. And that's a very simple process, right? You can also have a more complex process where you need to reserve inventory, where you need to have serial number tracking, batch number tracking. And think about the car industry, for instance, right? They track serial numbers on the parts. They track the chassis number. They check the VIN number. They need to register everything with the government. They have quality compliance. So those all processes, that doesn't change because you have a new system. You have to do it even if you don't have a electronic system. You just have to do it on paper.
So what goes wrong?
Now, what goes wrong is the advisor comes in and thinks they understand your process. You come in and you think you understand what the new software is going to bring. But we all know that you don't have the full picture. We're just making, filling in the blanks.
The gaps.
And how we do the filling in the gaps, the blanks in our understanding, is with wishful thinking. We expect the system to do this. Why doesn't it do that? And that's when the disappointment comes in.
And the cost.
And then comes the change order, and then the cost goes up, et cetera.
Exactly.
And the reason why the disappointment is always coming in, not at the beginning of the project, but somewhere closer to the end, is because it's such a massive change, and everybody is doing the best to get it live, is we don't actually bring small components live and then check if it works. And then improve it. Now we do everything at once because that's the big monolithic way of doing ERP
software. Forklift.
Analogy again is like we used to build the pyramids and Stonehenge, etc. with giant blocks of rock, right? If you position the rock different, the wrong way, that's a lot of manpower to move it. We've kind of evolved our building technology into small, you know, cinder blocks or cement, and put it all together, and we brick the house. And it's a lot easier to correct your mistakes a lot sooner than with a giant block you put in. ERP software, in the general classic ERP, like SAPs, etc., they're the giant blocks. Where we're going is integrated applications. And the integrated applications are small pieces of brick, for instance, for your process.
Like we don't need to only move the rocks anymore. Like
no, but you got your sales software. You got your accounting software. You got your marketing software. They're all different applications you can implement separately. But what you do is you manage the mortar between them for your business transactions.
Oh, that was the ladies and gentlemen, Matt Kupan. We'll take a short break. You're listening online, 90.5 Business with Mario. And if you have any questions, please go on our website, alive905.com.au, or, you know, you can tune in directly, or you can send a text. There's a number. Thank you for listening online, 90.5.
Alive 90.5.
Sweet mama, sweet sugar mama, your fake is very sore.
All the girls.
Best is an urban renewal and property development specialist whose reputation is centred on delivering great places to live and work. They take pride in transforming and delivering harmonious communities. Royal Shores, developed by Pace, is a new waterfront community in Parramatta. Set right on the waterfront at the gateway to Sydney Harbour, Royal Shores is one of Pace's most unique urban developments to date. Pace, transforming places since 1978. Station sponsor.
The Hills area has one of the most beautiful cemeteries in the Sydney region. Castlebrook Memorial Park at Rouse Hill provides the perfect resting place for your loved ones with manicured lawns and beautifully tended gardens. They cater for people from all backgrounds and you can talk to their family service advisors almost any day from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Their website is castlebrook.com.au. Castlebrook Memorial Park is at Windsor Road, Rouse Hill, and is a proud sponsor of Alive 90.5.
Could you recognise if one of your friends or family was having a stroke? Think fast.
F. Face.
Check their face. Has their mouth drooped?
A. Arms.
Can they lift both arms?
S. Speech.
Is their speech slurred or confused?
T. Time.
Don't wait. Call 000 now. Think fast. Act fast.
A message from the National Stroke Foundation.
You're listening to the sound of Alive
90.5. 27 minutes past 12. You're on Alive 90.5. Business Insights with Mario.
Darren, I just have a question for you. Like, you know, maybe you can help it to our listeners. Darren, he's a not just a big engineer, but he's a perfectionist. He's a, and another thing, he's going to drive the Tour de France next year. I'm feeding him well, and he's going to drive. Now, we can't make it put software in the bicycle to the bicycle drive the desirable speed Mario wants. However, our guest in studio, and Darren and I have this conversation before, Matt, when I started my business, I take myself, for example, because nobody can sue me. And I didn't know nothing, you know, I mean, what laptop I need, you know, what the speed it is, what Intel this, i3, 5, 7, whatever these things they are, right? I was just happy to run the business, you know, buy the printer. But, you know, I didn't have the money, right? I didn't have the money to buy most of the things, that including Office Suite, it's called today, Microsoft. I can say this, you know, majority of people using Microsoft Suite. Now, for our listeners, and as I said, like you, you used to be being the high position person in Microsoft and organizations, and you know what needs they are for the businesses. If somebody or our listeners contemplating to start a business, sole trader or small business, few employees, what would your recommendation be to anybody? What they need to run, how to say, an interrupted business with all these gadgets and apps or the whatever you call these things?
That's a very good question. And it actually happens a lot when people start a business. And the last thing they think about is like, I need software, right? And you do. You do need software. The very simple reason is you don't want to overpay on tax, right? If you're GST registered, and I can advise to be GST registered, you want to get all your expenses and purchase GST back, right? Yes. So you need to capture software for that. And maybe it's good to talk about my journey into my company. So I left Microsoft and I thought like, oh, okay, you know what? I'm going to help customers implementing Microsoft. We work with them and their partner and all sort that out. But I need business software for myself as well.
You need it. Of course.
Right.
Need,
so I thought I need an accounting package. I need probably a customer relationship management package where I keep track of all the contacts I have with potential customers and my actual clients. And because I was a Microsoft partner registered, I had access to everything from Microsoft. So I had my mail server with Microsoft. I had my Office 365 Enterprise Edition with Microsoft. I had Dynamics CRM with Microsoft. And I didn't have the ERP side, but yeah, no, I don't need an ERP. It's enterprise resource planning. A one-person organization is not an enterprise.
Think
the monolith that you buy the pyramid, build the pyramid with, right? So I needed a very simple accounting package. So I did my research. And I look at it now. You got your zero. You got your MYOB. You got all these things. And I thought like, okay, if I look at it from my perspective as a user, am I solving the problem I have today? You can buy any accounting package. But I'm going like, no, I need to solve the problem I have today, but make sure I don't lock myself out next year or 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at an accounting package that is, one, affordable. Two, has integrations to other packages that are affordable. So I don't have to overspend all of a sudden. Now I need a CRM that talks with my accounting page, and there you go, $150 per user per month, right? Which is quite a bit of money if you just start out your business. So I landed with something called Zoho Books, which was, you know, three times nothing. I think I paid like $200 a year. And my accountant is for free on it and all that stuff. But it also integrates to Zoho CRM. And that also integrates to the Zoho, you know, other Zoho platform. And they got like 50 different products. And so that's how I started my journey. And as a customer of theirs, I was really impressed with the service I got. Yeah. So I actually changed my business model and said, this is what I'm going to represent, because this is what small businesses are missing, which is that entry-level software that has a propensity to grow with you quite far. Actually, the largest client they have on their Zoho One platform, which is you get everything for what we do for a fixed price per employee, which is like, you know, $50 per month or something like that, is the largest client is 29,000 users, right? So I think I can scale for the next decade on that one without actually worrying too much.
You know, something very interesting, Darren, maybe you can correct me, but I will say on my behalf and my experience, I will have a tendency to buy something more complicated because I believe it's more value than the something which is very simple. Why is that, Darren? Do you think that's because I believe it's more valuable and more, I don't know, productive if I buy something like, you know, complicated software, which even I don't know how to use, then rather get something simpler?
Maybe it's the idea you don't get a free lunch and you think, well, you got to buy a very expensive lunch to have lunch. Well, you just need to have lunch.
That's a good one, eh? That's actually a good one. Yeah, the lunch, eh? Because we have the tendency, and then they lock me in a contract. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, when the contract expires, if I don't want to continue, so like, well, data is with us, you know, I mean. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have all sorts of these, you know, experiences which I didn't like it, and just, you know, you can't go to the phone, you know, I mean, grab somebody and just, you know, do this, you know, I mean, but instead of this. But it's like, and today I will say, like, okay, what has solved my problem? But most of the business owners, they don't know what to solve the problem, because we're buying word of mouth. Let's say Darren will say to me, Mario, buy this mouse because it's good for me, you know what I mean? And I was like, well, if it's worth for Darren, I'll buy this, you know, mouse. But that necessarily means that this is a good thing. So how are we going to match, you know, my needs, I mean, needs of the clients, with something that we have on the market?
And that's where you actually go into the real question here. What are your needs? And here's a little trick to keep in mind. 80% of the value that you're going to get out of any application is only in 20% of its features.
Sorry, 80%, can you speak English? I know Darren understand. Darren, can you translate?
80% of the value, so the return on investment you're going to get from any business application, is only because of 20% of what it can do. Those are the important features.
I don't understand.
Think
seriously.
About it with a word processor package. Yeah. It may have things like mail merge. It may have things like it can do Chinese language.
Yeah.
It may have lots of these sorts of things that you're never going to use. So actually, when you look at it, the amount of those sort of features total about 80% of any product. The amount that you get value from is about 20%. So you want to type text.
Yes, that makes sense.
You want spell check in Aussie, English.
Yeah.
Maybe UK, if you're doing business over there,
and
you want it to be able to print.
It is true. That's true, Darren.
And that might be it. And maybe save to PDF. But do you need to export it to the competitors' word processor or not? Yeah. Probably not.
So why is not set up that way? It looks more lucrative to buy, to purchase, or?
It's so there's a lot of brand recognition, right? So if you think CRM, there's a certain brand that comes in people's mind, like, oh, that's a CRM. And it's a lot with advertising, and there's a lot of marketing events, and there's a name recognition. And it offers a lot of functionality. No one says how easy it is to use. No one says how many people use that functionality, but everybody goes, and I had actually this discussion with the chairman of the board somewhere, with at that time prospective client. They said, well, if you think CRM, then this is the one we have to go, because everybody knows it.
Yes.
And then
that was me. That was us buying. Everybody's using it. I'm going to buy as well. And then it doesn't, I don't, not that I don't need it. I'll just say, like, I'm photoshopping them, yes?
I was just thinking, does everyone drive a Ferrari?
No.
Not today, no.
Not today.
Another example.
See, this is what
you just need lunch.
Yes, I think.
Well, sticking with the Ferrari.
I'm hungry.
So the Ferrari can do, let's say, 300 kilometers an hour.
Yeah.
In Sydney traffic.
Yeah, that's
you're not going to hit 20% of that, right? So that's again,
the value is going back. You get a fine, and you might go to court.
Exactly. Now comes the whole thing. Living with a Ferrari, it's a beautiful car, right? They're not the most comfortable.
True.
They're also not the most spacious.
How do you know they're not comfortable?
I've been in a few. I never own one.
I can't fit you on that. That's the reason I'm asking you.
So they're not comfortable. They're also not known for being reliable.
Right? That's Ferrari. Must be reliable.
They're known for being reliable. It's a performance car. Everything is engineered to the edge. That's what you're paying for. Now, if it's your software, if you're going to get all the bells and whistles with lots of things that you don't not intending to use or use sparingly, you enter into a realm of complexity, right? Because it can do more. Therefore, you need to learn more. Even if you have to learn, like, oh, we're not going to use that. You also have more opportunities to break it. And you also have more opportunities for bugs to come into software. So keeping it simple is a much better alternative. But keeping it simple and then restrict yourself like, well, I better not grow my business from now on because otherwise my software doesn't scale, then you've selected the wrong package. So you need the simplicity with the ability to extend, to grow. And in a way that you can keep your current process without adapting it too much, without changing it too much, and without all of a sudden having a price hike. Because if you do something, let's say, an accounting base for $200 a year, and all of a sudden you want to add for your sales staff, and you hire two or three salespeople, and now you need to add $150 per month per salesperson just for the customer relationship management, return on investment is, for a small business, hard to find. Mm-hmm. Right? So you need to think about,
I must laugh at
can I afford
it? I grabbed a new laptop, right? Because I want to have something at home, right? You know, I mean, just I want to have that work. Anyway, we were going to those security features. And I said to Matt the other day, I said, like, you know, there's some girl Cortana on my laptop here. I mean, she says, how I can help you. I have a Siri on the phone. This is becoming like, and you know, I don't use these things, but it looks so fancy. And say, like, hi, Mari, what can I do for you for today? I was like, who's talking? I mean, like, why is all this attractiveness in a packaging of the you know, hardware?
Everything should be sexy.
Well, no, you know what I mean? But no,
I know what you mean. I was thinking I actually want Mario on my phone.
Well, that's correct. You're listening alive, 90.5, sexiest voice on the planet, with the most sexy engineer, Darren Capes Davis, Mario and Darren, with our guest in the studio, Matt Koopman from Aurelian Group. We'll take a short break and come back. And thank you for listening. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Alive 90.5.
How can we be lovers if we can't be friends? How can we start over when the fighting never ends, baby? How can we make love if we can't make a mess? How can we be lovers if we can't be happy friends?
Director of Cherrybrook Real Estate, Sam Ramone, is a specialist in property management in residential in the Hills District. He prides himself on taking the stress out of property management and looking after your investment at a competitive rate. If you need property management, please call Sam Ramone from Cherrybrook Real Estate on 9980 9860. Station sponsor.
Hi, Alan Barnes here from Dhurlpool Shop. I opened our shop intending to always listen, really listen, to our customers so we could fully understand and meet their pool needs. Along with that, we stocked the top brands of pool chemicals, cleaners, pumps, filters, heaters, fittings, spare parts, you name it. You'll find full details on our website at dhurlpoolshop.com.au, or better still, drop in and see me and the gang at Shop 2, 270 Newline Road, Dural. We'll help you to get your pool just the way you want it.
Dural Pool Shop, station sponsor.
Alive 90.5, broadcasting to the hills, Parramatta and Cumberland.
It's 18 minutes to 1 on Alive 90.5, Business Insights with Mario.
Well, Darren, that was an interesting discussion, what we need when we start a business, and thanks to Matt Koopman. I'm very, very grateful for that one. But Matt, let's go do the leap of in time now, right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So let's go come into March 2020. Beautifully. How this year started for you?
So
okay, that was a good one. That was a deep right there. So please tell us here.
So this year, FY20, which is financial year 20, which we just closed in June 30th.
Okay. And let's not jinx it, you know what I mean? That's good.
Yeah, yeah. So I had my targets for the beginning of the year, and I was actually on track to meet them and exceed them by December. And we have more than just the COVID, right? We had the drought. We had bushfires and all this stuff. And some of my customers were affected by that, but I also have customers all overseas. And then all of a sudden comes in COVID-19. And some of my clients, they're in the travel industry. Mm-hmm. They're not up on their feet yet, right? So I feel really sorry. But they seem to be supported by the government.
Did you see news today? Did you see news today? The airport's opening this weekend for international travel.
Yes.
From
a economic perspective, I don't know how long we can keep the country closed. Because, once you're COVID-free, what are you going to do next if the rest of the world still has it? Right? Are you going to be locked down forever? I don't know. I don't have the answer.
That's my question. So when the COVID started, and I know Darren and I, we speed up, in a studio. And I said, thanks to Darren, we could reach the clients, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, digitally, right?
Yeah.
So before, I have so many questions for you, but I like to go over some tips, because it's like you are the expert, Darren is the expert, but you have the hands-on on some digital business security features. Now, when the COVID hit, everybody was transforming to working from home. And I don't know, Darren, how did you felt, but I felt miserable because my NBN was down. It's like, I can't even enjoy the internet, because everybody's working from home. Did you have that experience as well?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. 9 o'clock in the morning, everything ground to a crawl. You think, everyone's on their meetings.
And you know what's happened then? I was forced to walk. I was like, God, I'm going to walk for a couple of hours. I can't do something. But Matt, most of risk management frameworks in Australia never anticipated to work from home on such a scale as it is.
Correct.
And I truly believe, regardless of, political or geopolitical circumstances of Australia with the rest of the world, we're talking about working from home. So we all adapted this ourselves to work from home. We don't talk about KPIs or how, whose performance. But most of us, they use it, including me, my domestic network, which is NBN. And as I heard, maybe I'm not correct, maybe I'm totally wrong, routers are the most vulnerable things to be attacked and exploit, and as a part of security overall. However, the most of businesses, they work from home. And did you see the changes, or what was the pitfalls actually? What was the downfalls working from home? Instead of me saying these things, right? I say about myself, I was trying to be minimum, and even that minimum was frustrating because NBN was on a dial-up in that speed, and I couldn't explain myself why is that, But at 2 o'clock in the morning, I could go on the internet. However, working from home, and me as an expert, I can't advise everybody, and I can't explain to risk management experts, that's the wrong. We use our machines, our network, but to communicate not home to home, business to business, but globally sharing a lot of information. So tell us about pitfalls and what you saw.
So the first thing you mentioned, routers is the most sensitive, or what do you call it, the insecure part of your home network. It's actually the second most. The first most insecure point of your network, any network, is the user.
What did you say? That's not digital.
That is us.
That's not digital.
That is us, right?
Stop laughing. What?
Oh, it just reminds me of the picnic era.
Who?
Well, when you're what? IT support, you talk about the picnic era. Problem in chair, not in computer.
Oh, let me write this down. You know what I mean? Like,
that's good. I'll sell that one to you.
Yeah, I'll load that.
No, it's not mine. I've heard it.
It's like many illegal times. User operation, replace user, press any key to continue. So the most things that we think around IT security is we think about the hooded hackers. Like, if, I don't know if you've seen Mr. Robot,
the
right?
Hats,
and the black hats and the Linux run laptops and all that stuff.
The dark web.
But the actual vulnerable spots in any network is the user. Now, what we do with equipment and security software is to mitigate that, right? So you can mitigate a lot of things. So in your home network, you should need to mitigate a lot of things because you're not running an enterprise network. You're not running an enterprise router. Also, what is another very vulnerable point, like, for instance, IP cameras that you have in your security cameras, if they connect to the internet, they're not always well secured and they can have a denial of service attack and all that stuff. That's actually not so much interesting, because what really is interesting for a business, like, okay, what is the computer software that I'm using? Do I use my own device? Do I have proper security measures on there? So, for instance, virus checks, do I update it regularly? Do I have my macros enabled in my office suite? Because that's how a lot of the virus come in, is they send you, like, here's your invoice for something you never purchased. Double click here to open it, and then executes a macro in your office suite, right? So they all need to be disabled. So a lot of the convenience things actually are security risks.
And the extra point is that to do that, the organization will say, we want to control your computer.
Yes.
Joe Public says, no, I
happen.
Don't want that.
Yeah.
No, we need to.
Yeah.
But I need to be free. Ooh.
Well, here's the other way of looking at it is, if you take away most of the processing and storage from the computer, so the device only becomes an entry point, right? So I have my the office documents in the cloud and my software to run those documents in the cloud, then I actually run a lot more secure, because my computer, the vulnerable spot, that's only the browser accessing it. So that's number one. Number two is, make sure, and by the way, you should do this always, is multi-factor authentication. So single-factor authentication is, you type in your username, you type in your password.
Mm-hmm.
And we always use the same password over and over and over again. So if you're one time hacked, then it's everywhere, right? It's incredibly simple, if you have the hash of the password, to get it actually unhashed. And it takes about 30 seconds. Right, with a very medium computer, $1,000 computer.
So, simple speak, breaking passwords.
Breaking passwords.
Simple.
If you have access to the encrypted form of password, it takes about 30 seconds for a $1,000 computer to unencrypt it.
And sometimes it may not be someone who wants it. It's just a script kiddie to prove something, but then they've given it to someone else who wants it.
Correct. Yeah. Now, multi-factor authentication is, you log in with your username and your password, and then you have to do something else. Either it is enter a code that comes in via text message. That is probably the least secure method of doing it. Or you have to, as we do, is hold up the phone and scan a particular code that is being displayed on the display. So you know that you have your phone nearby, and you have to have a conscious action, right? That means I authenticate that this device can go on the internet. So that someone from, and I've seen in my logs, I see that just people from Russia, from China, from Venezuela, are trying to access my system and fail.
Oh, we've seen
because
it
of that.
With a live 90.5. Yeah.
But the COVID-19, like, I truly believe, like, you know, it reminds me of the movie of the Eric Snowden, if you watch, you know, how I actually was working for NSA, created that software which is open the microphone and the camera on your devices, you know. And I have it in front of me, and I can quote this. It's from the magazine businessinsiders.com.au. But the point is, like, foreign intelligence operatives are reportedly using online platforms of video conferencing apps like La 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 to spy on the people. Now, this is the April, right? And the COVID was just, you know, it just in full speed to develop, in, I mean, in a lockdown another 2 months. However, what I saw, that applications people using this online conferencing was actually being, I think the corporations are not educated. They need educated people not to, you know, put the names and the faces, you know, I mean, because, you know, as much as this looks, attractive, lucrative, you know what I mean, way of the, you know, promoting the company, the event and everything else. However, you know, one picture of the one person, it says a lot. You know, see the background, see the foreground, and you can see, you know, you can profiling. However, there was the names and everything else. But what most scary part it is that corporations are still using third-party softwares for the online conferencing. Even there was an early warning in March, in April, do not use those softwares.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that, Matt?
Because it's convenient. I don't know if you can...
What do you mean convenient? Don't take me to... don't make it walk there, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, so... Yeah.
So there's one video conferencing software that almost becomes a verb. Like searching on the internet is now a verb. It's the company name, right? Mm-hmm. So we all know, like, I'll get on a with you, right? Yeah. And we're going to go, The risks there initially were like, well, they said it was end-to-end encrypted and it turned out not to be, right? Then you go like, okay, so anyone could actually listen in to your conversations. You go like, well, that's not so important. I go from a different area. That company is technically very capable. If you make software that's this great, that's not an oversight that you're not end-to-end encrypted, right? It's just someone made a decision there. Because otherwise it just doesn't match. It's like you can engineer a rocket to Mars, but you can't build a car. Right, it makes no sense.
Well, man, that's very interesting. But you know, call that break today. We need to give it a breather. We'll take a short break because you know it's coming the news soon. You're listening to Live 90.5 Businesses with Mario and Darren. Now we're gonna grill our guest in studio, Matt Koopman, in a few minutes after the break. We talk about encryption. Don't forget that one.
Live 90.5.
Crying next Pace is an urban renewal and property development specialist whose reputation is centred on delivering great places to live and work. They take pride in transforming and delivering harmonious communities. Located less than 30 minutes from Sydney CBD, Washington Park, developed by Pace, is an entirely new urban renewal situated amongst beautiful parklands and open spaces. Washington Park delivers an environment designed to promote healthy living and social interaction. Pace, transforming places since 1978. Station sponsor.
Station sponsor Lynn's Fine Needlework is a one-stop shop for all your patchwork, quilting, needlecraft supplies and tuition. On linsfinenedlework.com.au, you'll see over 3,000 patchwork fabrics, hundreds of pattern kits, threads and lots of interesting projects for your selection. Their classes cater for beginners to advanced students who work at their own pace and receive individual attention. Enroll now by phoning 9686 2325. Lynn's Fine Needlework at Suite 2, 97 Hills Road, Baulkham Hills. Sponsor, Keith Till's I Get Around Show every Thursday at noon.
Hi, this is Graham Davidson inviting you to a journey with me on the Soul Train on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on Alive 90.5. For the best in soul, R&B, funk, southern and jazz rock sounds. The Soul Train on Tuesdays at 8 p.m.
When you're on the road, remember to keep a safe distance from trucks at all times. Because of their size and length, trucks have larger blind spots than the average car. This means truck drivers can't always see you. So for everyone's safety, be cautious when driving next to or behind a truck. We all need to look out for each other. So take care and be truck aware. A message from the New South Wales Government.
Thanks for listening to the best in community radio, Alive 90.5.
Live 90.5. Here's the latest news brought to you by Pace, transforming places since 1978.
National Radio News.
Hello, I'm Shannon Kirkwood. Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews has warned Victorians against any complacency with this latest coronavirus outbreak. The state has recorded 66 new cases.